Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which can be found at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is your host Jasper. Kareem Saeed is back because he took the bribes, and on this episode we're going to discuss the Adam Sandler fiasco Jack and Jill, a movie that we here at Pop Scorn are actually glad exists. See, thanks to a trailer review Ghostface Miller wrote 4 months ago, Popscorn ranks number one on Google if you search the question, why does Adam Sandler's son have a wooden pepper mill taped to his head in the Jack and Jill trailer? Sure, there are better things to be number one at, but for now, we'll take this.
So how long does it take to get a response on one of those computer dating things? I'm new to this. I mean, it can take a day, it can take a week, you know what I mean? For someone like her, what was that? Why did you say... like her? No, someone like her, like, in her 40s, still single, you know what I mean? Incredibly homely.
Wow, you hate your job, don't you?
No, I only said that because you said that one time.
I can say that because I'm her twin.
Hey, Jack, the Lakers game tomorrow night. We got to make that Pacino thing happen. Everybody's really nervous around here.
Yeah, I know.
Now, what's this about a twin?
Oh, Jackie has a twin sister.
Are you kidding me? You never told me you had a twin sister?
Nah, I mean, she's...
Identical or fraternal?
Nocturnal, like a bat.
So, Kareem, I want to start this episode with a little experiment, if you don't mind. Jack and Jill, we saw it. Yay! No? No? Okay, the crickets?
No.
Okay, no. I was just making sure. And Jack and Jill is this sort of already notorious comedy in which Adam Sandler plays two roles, himself and a female Saturday Night Live skit version of himself.
Right.
Or, to be more specific, he plays this family man advertising executive named Jack and Jack's twin sister Jill, who is basically just a complete disaster on every level, who does nothing but wreak havoc on Jack's life. So by knowing this premise and by knowing it's Adam Sandler in dual roles, you also know what you're getting into right away with this movie? Or do you? Because honestly, the way the movie begins kind of threw me off a little bit. It begins with this montage of twins. They're ostensibly actual real-life twins. It's sort of like TLC documentary style. And what we learned about being a twin is that basically twins can say the same things at the same time.
Yeah, it's just natural, apparently.
It just happens. So Getting back to what I said earlier, I wanted to start this episode with a little experiment. Are you scared right now?
A little.
Okay. I ate my twin in utero. So I was supposed to be a twin, but it didn't happen.
Right.
But I was wondering if we could try like a twin experiment right now. I'm going to count to three. And on the count of three, I feel like we should both say our some feelings about Jack and Jill.
Okay,
ready?
Yes.
Okay. One, two, three. Jack and Jill is not the worst movie I've ever seen.
I can't.
See, that didn't work. I guess we're not, like, spirit twins or whatever.
Darn it. I really thought that we would be.
How are you going to finish the sentence? Like, do you think it's the worst movie you've ever seen?
No.
No, I don't either. And I feel like everyone has been dogpiling on this thing from the beginning. Not undeservedly, because this is not, by any stretch, a good movie. But
no,
I guess one of the things that I want to talk about is how it's not a good movie, and yet I didn't find it completely unamusing, but I'm not sure if my finding of amusement inside Jack and Jill was intentional on the part of the filmmakers or the people who wrote this.
Right.
It's a very strange movie, and I want to kind of open the floor by talking about the laziness in this movie and the laziness in Adam Sandler's other movies. His more recent movies have been chastised by critics very, you know, deservedly for being just lazy excuses to sort of get all of his friends together and make a movie and make money from making that movie. His last two movies especially, last summer of 2010, he released a film called Grown Ups, and I don't know if you're familiar with that movie, but that movie literally was, I'm getting my friends together, we're going on a vacation, and we're going to tape it, and you're going to watch it.
And it was all the stars from Saturday Night Live of yesteryear, right?
More or less. It was David Spade, Chris Rock, Rob Schneider, and Kevin James, who might as well have been on Saturday Night Live 15
right.
years ago. I mean, I don't know what he was doing 15 years ago, but he should have been on Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he's friends with that gang now because of Paul Blart Mall Cop and Zookeeper, which are from the same company. I mean, Adam Sandler's fingers were in those pies for sure. Yeah, so Grown Ups is seriously just, I mean, that movie was completely lazy. It was a bunch of really obvious jokes, just kind of those people sitting around. Sometimes they would walk into trees. They would get hit in the balls by random objects, I think tree branches. There was a lot of tree-on-man humor in that movie. And then earlier this year, he released a movie called Just Go With It, where he played a guy who lied about Jennifer Aniston being his ex-wife because he was trying to impress this, like, Sports Illustrated swimsuit model or something. And it was just one of those very, like, ridiculous concept comedies that just basically got him and all of his friends to go to Hawaii to film it.
Mm.
So here's a question for you. Jack and Jill, how much do you think this movie costs to make? Like, what was the budget, do you think, on Jack and Jill?
Like, $50 million.
$50 million. You're not too far off, honestly. $79 million was the budget for this movie.
Wow.
Yeah. Where was that on screen? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I mean, actor salaries?
Actor salaries, sure. I mean, this is another case where it's Adam Sandler getting that crew together. Not necessarily in big roles. They don't have starring roles like they did in these other movies. Tim Meadows is there, David Spade, Norm Macdonald, Dana Carvey. Like, all of his Saturday Night Live compatriots are in this movie in pretty small roles, you know, maybe one or two lines. David Spade probably has the biggest role of any of them, and he's in drag for most of it.
Yeah.
But
Tim Meadows, his role was very short. I think he was on screen, like, three times, and each time he had, like, one line.
Yeah, he just had, like, a really quick punchline, and then he got his one-third of his check and left the set.
Is that what happens to Saturday Night Live actors when their skit-to-movie attempt fails?
But you're talking
they
about
just end up being, like, backup actors in other cast members' bad movies?
This is what hell that the ladies' man hath wrought.
Yeah. Seriously.
So this movie cost $79. This movie cost $79. That was a slip, but it might as well have. I mean, there's no real special effects in it aside from the, you know, really breathtaking
bad makeup.
Well, I was going to say, you know, you said bad makeup. I guess David Spade's fake boobs, which are sort of revealed in this kind of tight hoochie top that shows off his cleavage, that probably cost, I don't know, a couple hundred.
And like a weird bad jab at New Jersey, even though they're supposed to be in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I didn't understand that scene at all, but
we can get to that.
We're getting way ahead of ourselves. But I mean, this movie doesn't have much of anything in terms of special effects aside from, like, the technology that allows Adam Sandler as Jack to be in the same shot as Adam Sandler as Jill.
Right.
So it's like, you know, the Patty Duke show was doing that in the 1950s. And I'm not thinking that the technology for that is very expensive or costs that much money, but this is what we have in Jack and Jill. I just look at the budget for this thing and it kind of makes me sad because this is a lot of money for something like this, which probably should have cost maybe $10 million or so.
Right.
If it was like Sam Rockwell as Jack and Jill, or like an actor with indie credibility, they would not have had the budget that this thing had. Although, I would probably watch the Sam Rockwell version of Jack and Jill. I'd be interested in seeing that.
You think so?
Yeah, well, I mean, just because, why would Sam Rockwell be in a movie like that?
It's a tired formula.
It is. It's lazy. It's very lazy because you sort of get all of the setup just from knowing what the premise is. But at the same time, I would say that this is lazy in a far more interesting way than a lot of the other recent Adam Sandler comedies are. Because, like I said before, a lot of the humor in this movie, I don't know if I'm laughing with the movie or at the movie. There are things in this movie that are so completely bizarre and almost surreal. I was laughing at this movie, I'm almost ashamed to admit, somewhat regularly, but I don't think that I was laughing with it all the time. I think a lot of the time I was sort of making up in my head, wow, this is like, if these were jokes in a French movie, this would be hilarious. Like, the critics would be falling all over themselves to rave about it.
So you're kind of specifically referring to the young boy and his tape addiction and just kind of how it's strangely referred to but never focused on, and it's always just kind of this recurring, it's a running gag.
Basically, it's Adam Sandler and Katie Holmes, who plays Adam Sandler's wife. Now, what did you think of Katie Holmes? Actually, while we're talking about her, let's mention her really quickly.
I didn't really think of her at all.
Basically, she is in this movie because every once in a while, after Adam Sandler as Jack, her husband, says something awful to Jill, it'll cut to her and she'll say, "Jack, don't."
Right. Exactly.
So that's the extent of Katie Holmes. Like, she's basically just standing around in the scenes.
Yeah.
They have a daughter who I'm presuming is their actual biological daughter. And then they have a son played by Rowan Chand, who is adopted from India. And this is probably my favorite character in the movie, if I can assign the word favorite to anything in this movie. But one of the first scenes in this movie is a Thanksgiving dinner sequence where Jill is joining the family for the first time. And Adam Sandler and Katie Holmes' adopted son is sitting there with a leaf taped to his polo shirt or whatever. And eventually, after a couple shots of this, somebody actually speaks up and asks why there is a leaf taped to his polo shirt. And Katie Holmes' response to that is, oh, he really likes tape. Which I laughed at, because I was like, is this fun? Like, is this supposed to be funny? Like, he likes tape. And then as the dinner progresses, the more shots it cuts back to of this little boy, the more things he has taped to himself.
Right.
At one point, he has a wooden pepper mill taped to his forehead, like he's a unicorn that dispenses pepper.
Right.
And I think near the end of the film...
A peppercorn?
I like it. You should sell that on TV. Like the headgear and everything and the setup. It'd be great. Like all you need to do, if you need to put pepper on anything, just like move your head forward a couple times and you got it. Which is actually sort of a joke in the movie. I won't take credit for it, but actually Jill grabs him by the head and like pushes his head down on the plate to dispense pepper on her Thanksgiving dinner. But at the end of the dinner, it cuts back to this child and his shirt is off and he has taped like a gigantic turkey leg to his chest. And it was just one of those like strange, strange things. I laughed at it and I would qualify the laugh I did as robust, but that is such a strange joke that requires like nothing. There's no like intelligence to it or anything like that. And it's just sort of there and it's present throughout the movie. And, you know, all through the movie, you see random things taped to this kid. It goes to animals, actually. At one point, he has a hamster taped to himself. And another point, he has Jill's pet cockatoo taped to himself. Which,
yeah.
And while we're talking about the cockatoo, let's bring up something else that I laughed at that doesn't make any sense at all. Jill brings with her this cockatoo. And immediately, when Adam Sandler goes to pick Jill up at the airport or whatever, you see her with this cockatoo in a cage. And my immediate thought was, here is the cockatoo, and the cockatoo will talk, and the cockatoo will say things like, lick my balls, or something like that. I thought it was going to be that kind of movie, like where the cockatoo says like inappropriate things, and family members at the Thanksgiving dinner who were older and very easily shocked would gasp at this cockatoo. But that's not at all what happens. So the movie is able to subvert a few expectations, because that's what I thought was going to happen. But instead, the weirdest thing about this cockatoo is that the cockatoo basically has one line throughout the movie, and it's, where were you?
Yeah. I think it's because at the very beginning...
Was he late to the airport?
Yeah, I think that's where it came from.
So when he comes in, Jill to Jack says, where were you? And the cockatoo picks up on that.
And but, they continue to go back to that throughout.
But again, like the kid taping things to himself, extremely lazy, but so strange that I laughed at it.
Right.
So what the The very first scene of the movie Beyond, the twin documentary style footage in the very beginning, is over the opening credits. You see like Jack and Jill as children playing with each other. And I guess it does deserve pointing out that it takes, what would you say, about 40 seconds for this movie's first fart joke?
It happens really early. Adam Sandler farts, and then the camera pans over to Jill. They're like little kids in the bathtub together.
That's right.
And Jill farts longer.
She's better at farting, is the setup. Right. I don't remember. Were there a lot of fart jokes all throughout the movie? A couple times. Oh, well, there's definitely a scene where she has Mexican food. And,
yes.
And she shits a lot in the bathroom, and there's all manner of disgusting noises coming from the bathroom. So, yes.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a heavy reliance.
And you get Adam Sandler waving his hands around, going, oh.
Oh, that smells. It smells horrible, because farting in and of itself is not funny enough. Like, we need somebody reacting to the farting.
Right. And then there's another fart joke when they're in the movie theater together.
That's right. There's the joke where she, like, kind of looks around, and she kind of lifts up half of her gigantic ass off the seat and lets one slide or whatever. And then doesn't Jack correspond with that too? Because
so they do it in sync.
Oh, that's right. Because the point of that scene, the adopted Indian son is sitting between them, and he sort of looks at both of them like, my dad and his sister are so much more alike than they realize.
Right.
Which I guess is the thesis of this movie. I mean, that's sort of what brings them back together, even though they spend most of the movie hostile towards each other. Or, you know, she really tries to get with Jack a lot in sort of strange ways, honestly. There's a lot of her trying to cuddle with him, like surprise him while he's sleeping by just kind of attaching herself to his back while he wakes up. And he's like, what are you doing? And she's like, I like cuddling. Like, it's
right.
All very, very strange.
Why won't you cuddle with me?
Yeah, which I don't, you know, if I were a twin, I don't know if I'd be doing that a lot, especially as like a 40-year-old person. That's a little
really
odd.
Bizarre.
Yeah. This was some of the bizarre humor that I didn't laugh at. I was just kind of like, ugh. But,
right.
So yes, there's a lot of farting in this movie because farting is funny. But product placement is also funny because we're introduced to Jack. He's an advertising executive, which is just, again, lazy. Yeah. We're going to throw that word around a lot. It's probably the laziest job you can have in a comedy, especially a comedy like this, because it sort of just kind of presumes that you have a setup where you can bring all manner of celebrities in, and there are quite a few surprising celebrities that pop up in this movie. It's also probably kind of the thing where they got a lot of money for putting all this stuff in there. And this movie begins with a scene where Adam Sandler, as this advertising executive, is on set of a Pepto-Bismol commercial starring Regis Philbin and a Muppet of some kind. It's not like a legit Muppet. And there's some drama on the set of this commercial. And Adam Sandler's character is so upset because things are not going that great. And he knows that he has to pick his horrible, horrible, castrating, awful twin sister from the airport the next morning very early. So he's in need of Pepto-Bismol himself. So he's actually standing right beside this tray that is sort of like a craft services tray. Mm-hmm. But instead of sandwiches or like cupcakes, it's actually a tray with Pepto-Bismol on it.
Yeah. Why would... with like boxes of Pepto-Bismol.
Why would that be there? Like, were they handing them out to people on the set? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And he, of course, you know, immediately is like, oh, I feel horrible. And he opens one up and he holds the bottle in a way like people hold Coke cans in Coke commercials, where the label is facing out. It's very deliberate. You know, I mean, later on in the movie, there is a good deal of product placement from Royal Caribbean Cruises. Like, an entire sequence of the movie takes place on a cruise ship for, I mean, no discernible reason other than let's get money from Royal Caribbean Cruises. And then one of the biggest things in the movie, of course, is Dunkin' Donuts, which is all through the movie. Because, you know, he lands this Dunkin' Donuts commercial that he's really trying to get Al Pacino to star in because this product is called the Dunkachino. It's this new coffee drink that Dunkin' Donuts is marketing. So why not have Al Pacino be like, I'm changing my name to Dunkachino.
And they also do Coke, and they also do Samsung telephones.
Oh, yeah, that is true. I forgot about the Samsung telephones.
There's just a ton of product placement throughout.
And yet, one of the things I would say in this movie's favor, this is a 90-minute movie. Did you feel like it went by pretty quickly?
No, it felt long.
Did it feel long for you? Honestly, yeah. It didn't feel that long to me. And I think one of the reasons why, when Jill gets to Jack's house and starts really bothering him and sort of trying to worm her way into his family and saying, you know, she's going to stay. Initially, she's just supposed to stay for Thanksgiving, but Jack and Jill's mother has passed away. So this will be like Jill's first holiday alone on her own. There are these really preposterous attempts to make Jill, you know, a very sympathetic character that don't work. Would you say they don't work at all? I don't think they work at all. I think she's a really horrible character.
No, I agree. One of the weird things about this movie was that I suppose the audience is supposed to feel sorry for her because she is kind of universally panned by all the other characters for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why she's universally panned by all the other characters in the movie. She's not likable in any way.
Yeah.
She's offensive and loud and
One of the most interesting things to me about this movie was how it finally made me sympathize with the character played by Adam Sandler. Because, you know, Adam Sandler is usually somebody I see in films and I find him fairly insufferable, just very smug about, you know, about his comedy, about what these movies are. They're very, like, assembly line comedies that people just, you know, go to laugh at the fart and poop jokes. You know, as Jack, I felt sorry for this guy because his twin sister is horrible. And I sympathized with him because if this person were in my house, I would want her gone as soon as possible too. So in that respect, you know, well played, Adam Sandler, in all honesty. Seriously, I finally am sympathizing with the character that you're playing. Of course, you're also playing the character that I want to destroy, so that's sort of unfortunate. But yeah, I think one of the reasons why this movie went by so quickly for me was there's a scene where after she decides that she's going to stay beyond Thanksgiving, you know, probably through Hanukkah and maybe even New Year's, I think she's threatening. And Adam Sandler is sort of like, oh no. One of Jill's lines is something to the effect of, you know, all the things that we can do. We can do a studio tour. We can go to the beach. We can go horseback riding. And during that moment, I just started to sort of sit there in dread at the thought of all the montages that we're going to have to sit through.
Yeah.
And honestly, they're dealt with pretty dispensably. They will bring up something and show you maybe like 20 seconds of it, and then they get on with it. And this studio tour is something that I think they show in the previews. I don't remember it being in the actual movie at all.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So in that respect, I was always surprised by how quickly the movie sort of did what it was setting out to do and then moved on to the next thing. And not saying that there aren't a lot of things in this movie. There are quite a few things. There are a lot of set pieces. Of course, we have to talk about this business with Al Pacino, who, judging from the trailer for this movie, it looks like Al Pacino has like a cameo in this, maybe, as somebody who sees Jill at a basketball game and sort of is smitten with her and sends her a hot dog with his phone number written on it in mustard and ketchup. But Al Pacino actually has a very meaty role in this movie.
He's in it a lot.
He is, you know, probably what, the person with the most screen time beyond Adam Sandler and Katie Holmes, maybe?
Way more than Tim Meadows.
Yeah, yes, definitely. He has more than three lines, is basically what we're saying.
Exactly.
And he should be proud of this performance. I mean, maybe I'm kidding, maybe I'm not. I would say that Al Pacino is somebody whose career has sort of taken a turn for the weird in the last decade. I think the last time I saw an Al Pacino performance that I really liked was in Insomnia, which was a Christopher Nolan film that came out, I think, in 2001 or 2002. And since then, he's just done a lot of bad, bad things. The Recruit, 88 Minutes, Righteous Kill, although I do have a soft spot in my heart for 88 Minutes, which is one of the most ridiculous things you'll see. But he's very hammy in all of these movies, and he's super hammy here, but I would say that it's hamminess with a purpose.
Yeah, I mean, even at the very end of the movie, when they do the advertisement dance and song, the Dunkachino commercial.
Yes.
Al Pacino, like, has several lyrics which are directly making fun of all of the stereotyped characters that he plays in other films.
Yeah. Well, there was definitely a line in the rap where he, in between verses, he says, "Attica, hoo-ah!"
Right.
So there's stuff like that in there. And, I mean, you know, if Al Pacino wants to make fun of himself after some of the things that he's done lately, I don't really have a problem with that.
He's earned that right.
Yeah, and this is a very strange, like, bizarro world Al Pacino. He's doing a stage show, I guess, in Los Angeles, because this movie's supposed to be in California, right?
It is.
Okay. And he's on stage doing Richard III. And this is something that I would confess I found funny, and the movie does want you to find this funny. This is, like, a very well-played joke. People are using their cell phones during the performance, or somebody says something to the effect of, I can't believe people would be doing this at a theater. This is a reputable show. And his response to that is, it's not that reputable. Bruce Jenner is playing Lord Hastings. And the camera pans over and you actually see Bruce Jenner in like full like Richard III get up. And
right.
He sort of like shrugs like, hey, I don't know. It does a few things like that that I think are funny, and funny with purpose more so than the son taping things to himself, which I found funny with a debatable purpose.
Now, can you think of another example?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, all the things that I can think of in this movie that I laughed at are things that are just so odd. One of the things that we kept giggling at throughout the movie was there are scenes where Al Pacino is trying to woo Jill. They're both from the Bronx, and she reminds him of growing up. He's wooing her.
He's having kind of like a celebrity breakdown, and he feels like she grounds him.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And he keeps having her over, and you frequently see his chef. Do you want to talk about the chef? Because I know you were very amused by the chef.
Oh, the chef who's always wearing his Olympic gold medal. It's,
yes.
It's very strange.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And what's weird is that he changes his chef costume, but he continues to wear this medal.
This gigantic medallion. It's gold, right?
I don't think. I think Al Pacino at one point goes, he's an award-winning chef. So
yeah,
that's the award.
Yeah, you watch that scene and you're like, okay, well, when they were reading the script, they were making props, and they thought, he's award-winning.
We better make him an award.
Yeah, and we'll have him wear it. So I guess the options were he could stand there with a trophy in his hand, but when he needs to toss the salad, he needs both of his hands.
Right.
So, you know, what are you going to do? The metal makes more sense, but it's very strange. It has a red, white, and blue stripes on the banner part of it. Yeah, I was very confused, so.
But, okay, so I guess that was the other purposeful joke then. The chef is foreign, and so I think he speaks Italian or something. And frequently Al Pacino will turn to him and start just speaking gibberish,
yeah.
which gets translated in subtitles as gibberish.
Yeah.
And the chef just kind of nods approvingly and says, okay, or I'll
yeah.
do whatever, and then walks away.
Yeah.
It's funnier than fart jokes.
It requires a little bit more setup because you actually have to go to like the internet and look up Italian words.
Right.
You just don't stand in front of a microphone and go.
Right.
So I guess something else that deserves mentioning is there is a surprise birthday party for Jack and Jill. They really load all the major holidays and birthdays into this movie.
They do. It was Thanksgiving, and then it went right into Hanukkah, and then they had a birthday party, and then it was New Year's.
Yeah. Major activity in the Sadelstein house between November and December. But there is a surprise birthday party, which I guess attracts all of Jack's clients from the advertising firm where he works. So you get a lot of very strange celebrity cameos. Celebrities like Vince, the ShamWow guy, and Billy Blank's Tai Bo instructor.
It's worth noting, the ShamWow guy had a ShamWow with him.
Yes.
And the Tai Bo guy was dressed in Tai Bo training gear.
Yes.
And like his hands were wrapped. He was ready to do Tai Bo.
You know, just in case you don't know who these people are, it will be figured out very easily when Vince, the ShamWow guy, pulls out a ShamWow. Also, Jared Fogel from Subway.
I was a little surprised he wasn't holding a sandwich.
Well, isn't he introduced by somebody going, "Wow, Jared the Subway guy." And you're just like, what is going on in this movie? Like, this is so, so strange. Another one of the interesting cameos in this movie is by Shaquille O'Neal, who has done commercials for Adam Sandler's Jack. He's wearing a strange wig in it. I forget what exactly he's promoting, but... Oh, he's promoting ham. Because his line in the commercial, which makes no sense, is, "A ham like this only comes once in a generation, like me." Which does not speak very well of Shaquille O'Neal's sexual prowess. Right? I mean, I've heard things, and this just kind of contradicts all that.
I can't make up my mind what I think about him in that situation. I don't know.
It's disappointing. Disappointing when you find out that your heroes probably have erectile dysfunction. What's the bottom line here? I guess, have we talked about all things Jack and Jill that we can talk about?
It was lazy. It took a lot of cheap jokes and delivered them in a tired manner.
Yeah.
You can't tell if the jokes that were kind of funny were legitimate or not. I don't know how to describe them.
Yeah.
Whether they were purposefully done or just accidental. Adam Sandler is annoying. Katie Holmes is annoying. The little boy likes tape.
I honestly don't know what to make of this movie really at all. I was not necessarily ever bored watching it. I was aggravated more than a few times, especially, you know, at the outset with the Jill character just being that, you know, really horrible Saturday Night Live style gap girl character, force of nature that she is. And the way Adam Sandler plays her is just so, so obnoxious. But I mean, you know, if they're going for the effect that Jack cannot stand to be around her, mission accomplished, but that doesn't make the rest of the movie genuine when there's that turn and they actually end up embracing her because she is actually, you know, a very lonely person with a good heart. But I would say that I guess the movie does tone her down over the course of its running time. She's not as shrill. I mean, she's still shrill. This is a shrill character just by definition alone. But right. I would say in the end of the movie, she's not as shrill as she is in the beginning of the movie.
Maybe.
I remember very clearly at the Thanksgiving scene, you leaned over and you were like, "I don't know if I can do this." And I remember thinking, yeah, you know, this is going to be a rough 90 minutes. And I feel like over the course of that 90 minutes, it only got less and less intolerable. Notice that I didn't say it got more tolerable.
That's a review right there.
Yes, these are all blurbs for the poster.
Progressively less intolerable.
You know, this thing is at 4% on Rotten Tomatoes. Not many people like it at all. And I understand that, and I don't like it. You know, my grade for this is going to be low, but I definitely laughed at things in it. I just don't know if I was supposed to be laughing. I don't know. This movie is very existential.
It left me questioning the meaning of comedy and life itself.
So what grade are you giving Jack and Jill?
If this is meant to be a family comedy, then there was enough fart jokes and there was enough kind of like quirky little quotables and strange things that a family could potentially enjoy it together. And so I would give it a C-. But if I'm just ranking this as a general comedy, then I give it a D.
So your overall grade would probably, like, you'd average it out to a D+.
Yeah.
I'm going to agree with you just because of how I grade movies. My approach to grading movies is that, you know, I grade them on how well they do what they set out to accomplish. I'm not sure what this movie was trying to do. If I had a better grasp of what some of the humor was supposed to be, I could probably be argued into a C-. That's not that much more than a D+. But I disliked this movie, but
definitely
things in it I giggled at and still giggle thinking about. So take what you will. I don't really know what else to say. Usually we try to end these scorn casts on a funny note, and I feel like this is a very talky, almost morose scorn cast episode. So the only thing I can think to do right now is just do this. And that's going to wrap up another episode of Scorncast. Remember to visit PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, where you can comment on our posts, or just click the plus one button if you're fresh out of comments, and you can email PopScorn at scornpop@gmail.com. And it's worth noting that Kareem and I learned only after recording the Scorncast that the Dunkachino is actually a real coffee drink at Dunkin' Donuts. Yeah, that chill you just felt was synergy.
So, Kareem.
Hey, that's my job.